From the newsroom of WBUR, I'm Darryl C. Murphy. Welcome to Consider This from Boston. Diversity in Boston exam schools has long been a challenge, but thanks to a recent change in the school's admissions policy, more Black and Brown students are getting into these prestigious hallways. This has been especially true for Boston Latin School, but not without its growing pains. So that's why today I'm talking with WBUR education reporter Max Larkin about the success of the new policy and what's behind the resistance to change. So, Max, before we get into this new admissions policy, can you give us some background on how admissions even became an issue in the first place?
Yeah, I don't think this is a change that happens without the pandemic, which, of course, made it hard to hold the in-person exam, which is a big part of the exam schools. So they made this sort of temporary policy shift where they're going to go from a citywide rank of the top scoring students to one that's a little more nuanced. It looks at students' home neighborhoods, whether they go to predominantly low-income schools or live in public housing, for example. The test goes away. It's coming back next fall. But that gave that interval gave us a chance to change this policy. And then, of course, politics was involved, too. You had people getting uneasy, I think reasonably so, that the most prestigious school in this overwhelmingly Black and Latino district was also one of the schools with the fewest Black and Latino students.
And so how much of a difference has this new policy made?
I think it's made a substantial one in just 2 years, Darryl. I'll give you one example. You have in Boston Latin a school that was only about 16% low income a few years back, way off the district average of around two-thirds low income. Now, under this policy, they're admitting 45% students from economically disadvantaged so-called backgrounds to all three exam schools. So it's not going to make it so the Boston Latin School or any of the exam schools looks exactly like the district around it, but they're getting a lot closer. And then the same thing goes for racial diversity, linguistic diversity, representation of disabilities, whatever measure you like.
Got it. And so, you know, usually when I read stories like this, I'm always learning about, you know, pushback. You know, what has that been like for Boston Latin with this new policy?
Yeah, there's definitely been pushback and pushing in all sorts of directions. You got parents of all kinds, Darryl, who are protective of these schools and especially of Boston Latin School, which is coming up on its 400th birthday. You know, they feel strongly for all kinds of reasons. So you have some parents who are kind of circling the wagons, really defending the admissions policy change, one that they advocated for. And then on the other side of the issue are parents like Marie Mercurio of Jamaica Plain. She'd say the new system is first unfair. Fair in the sense that it rules out kids who are qualified. And then she worries that among the kids who do get in, it may be setting them up to fail.
And so what concerns me, it is not the kids, it is the parents and the people who are trying to change the world for these kids that set them up to go to these schools where there are expectations.
Now, Darryl, to be fair to Mercurio, there really are high expectations at these schools for both behavior and academics. Boston Latin prides itself on having 3 hours of homework a night on average.
That's a lot.
So there may indeed be difficult adjustments for like a recent immigrant. But I don't think anyone else I spoke to for this story was quite so pessimistic about this experiment.
I mean, are there any examples in or out of the state of schools like failing with making a change like this?
Yeah, down in New York, they tried a similar change and it was rebuffed. And then elsewhere in San Francisco, they went to a temporary lottery for their magnet school, the Lowell School. And that's been controversial for its own reasons, Darryl. Like, what is the point of a more rigorous, more prestigious school if you get in via pure randomness?
Mm-hmm.
So what I think is interesting about this story is it kind of goes to the heart of public education in some ways. Should every school have equal expectations and be equally open to everyone? Or is there room for some differentiation, like policymakers have been trying to keep here in Boston, with some threshold, some standard of academic preparedness?
You know, I wonder how much of this is impacting students on a day-to-day. Because, you know, if you're a Black or Brown student, you know, you're kind of in the middle of all this. You just want to go to school and be a kid, you know? How are they dealing with it?
I think they're doing, based on my visit to the school, what kids do really well. They're adapting. And a lot of them love going to Boston Latin. There really isn't much evidence yet that the new classes are having, like, an unusually hard time with the school. that may change as more data comes out from last year, but I think school leaders on balance are optimistic. Then again, at the same time, Daryl, there's no question that kids right now have a lot to adapt to, and that's nationwide. So pandemic schooling and also the health and economic tolls of the pandemic, teachers everywhere tell me you see the effects of that still, no matter where you look. So there is need for support, clearly, and I think also for encouragement, a sense that, hey, you belong here too.
You mentioned support, so I'm also curious to know, like, what do they have right now in terms of support?
Well, I think this has been an area where the school has kind of been stepping up over the course of the last 6 years. They have an after-school club now that features enrichment, time to do some of that mountain of homework I mentioned, and time to just bond with other new students at the school. A lot of the support, Daryl, is coordinated by Rose Mateer, who's a Black alumna and knows the struggle of being there, but also serves as a kind of coach or motivator.
We would always remind them, stay on top of it. And I think for me, what's encouraging is that most times with education, you don't always see the immediate kind of turnaround. And so for them, it was after they got to evaluate their first year over the summer, they came back and said, here's what I'm going to do differently.
So Daryl, talking to Rose, there was this moving moment where she said kids who may have struggled, like honestly, a little bit last year with the academic side of things at least, came in and said, I'm starting all my homework as early as I can. I've got straight hundreds through the first couple of weeks of school. And just the enormous pride in having, you know, maybe had one tough year, but having learned the ropes.
It's fantastic. Sounds like she's having an impact over there.
It seems like it.
What else is Boston Public Schools doing to even the playing field for students in the city?
I think this was a high priority for the former superintendent, Brenda Caselius. She made a move gradually, but to roll out inclusion of students with disabilities in all the district's general education classrooms. That's something the district has struggled with for years. They've also tried to step up dual language instruction, which some research suggests works better for students learning English, who are a big part of the students they serve. So a little less emphasis on all English all the time. Mm-hmm. And previously, there was an effort to make sure that schools all have nurses, social workers, counselors on staff. Even if they're small, Daryl, schools, we come to realize, are these important social hubs. They connect students and their families to affordable food or mental health services. And with federal pandemic aid circulating in the district, there's an effort to make sure they're doing that job well.
Right. That's very true. And, you know, you mentioned the former superintendent. You know, while I have you, this week is Superintendent Mary Skipper's first day on the job. She's the one following Brenda Caselius. What are the immediate agenda items on her plate as she officially steps into this new role?
Yeah, unfortunately, Daryl, she steps in a little bit under a cloud. There's a state oversight memorandum that the district signed where they have to make all these improvements quickly. So as I mentioned, special education services for students with disabilities, reporting incidents of unsafe schools, bullying, also fixing bathrooms, making the buses run on time. She has this long laundry list of things she got to do. And it'll be really interesting to see whether she's able to meet all those deadlines.
Right on. Got a work cut out for her. Well, Max, thank you so much for coming by, man. I really appreciate you talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. That's WBUR education reporter Max Larkin. All this week, we're featuring the work of WBUR reporters who contributed to this year's Maker Series. Today's snippet is brought to you by WBUR Arts Fellow Lauren Williams, who spoke with Boston-based stage actor Chanel Chloe Villegas.
Do you remember when I tried to love you? You and you stood with me in a circle at a party, on a boat, in a roaring house by a fire, in a log cabin, and we breathed the same air, but not really.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an arts and culture fellow at WBUR, and I profiled Chanel Chloe Villegas for our Maker series. She's an actress, a teacher, and a writer, and she's been in 16 professional theater productions in Boston since 2018.
I can't find myself in the mirror, in the reflection of the screen, unless, of course, I am biting myself. You and you approve of the biting of the self, especially when it is a self that looks like me.
A play that is really special to Chanel is called What to Send Up When It Goes Down, and it's this interactive production that's part chant, part dance, part conversation, and it's kind of an homage to Black resilience and Black thought. It's something that's really grounding for her in her practice.
You love it. Oh, you love it when I bite myself. Because that is the kind of Black story you like. When I am heavy and downtrodden with biting myself. When I wear the flavor of Blackness you like. When it is a warm and fuzzy Blackness that does not creep under your bedroom door at night.
I, as the actor, can't judge my character, or even if I do, I can't play it.
Something from our original interview that I didn't include in the radio story was the way that she described the importance of theater, because it's a rare place of few judgments and a lot of empathy. Like, people buy tickets to watch the stories of others, not to judge them, and I had never thought about it in that way.
And when I'm not judging my character, I'm also not... I can't judge myself because then I have to play it, and then the audience is not judging me, or they're judging the character but also not me.
Being on stage and being in productions helps her feel like the world is a better place, and it feels like the world is becoming a better place through that. And so I feel like what will really stick with me after speaking with her is just her general love for her craft, like seeing her eyes light up and seeing her dedication to it, even if it's hard sometimes or she doesn't know what the next production's gonna be, because for her it really is like a transformational art form.
That's the world that I wish we could have. And so when I practice theater, I feel like this is the world transforming when we're sitting here together being empathetic for each other.
You can find more from this year's Maker Series at WBUR.org. And that's all for today. This episode was produced by Franny Monahan. Our show is mixed by Emily Jankowski, Matt Reed, and Paul Vikas. Our editor is Ben Brock Johnson. And from the newsroom of WBUR, I'm your host, Daryl C. Murphy. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, you're a podcast listener, right? Would you like this show along with all of WBUR's best news stories of the day about Boston and the region all in the podcast feed? I suggest you search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe. You'll be able to find just a local segment of Consider This, plus our best coverage in business, tech, politics, education, and arts and culture, all in one place. Search WBUR News in your podcast app and hit subscribe.